Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do it. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
You're on Long Final, Ireland's aviation podcast. From Squawk 7000.
Welcome to this episode of Long Final from Squawk 7000, Ireland's aviation podcast. In this episode, the story of a labour of love, the building of an aircraft that generates a smile for all who fly in her, called the Orvi Smile. The aircraft is EISRV, issued with its permit on March 9th and operated by Kevin Keir and Martin Doddy and based at Knock. Kevin and Martin join me now, as does the aircraft's builder, Stuart Hamilton. Gentlemen, welcome to the episode. Who's going to tell me the story of this stunning looking aircraft? Kevin.
Well, it's not me, Michael, but I think really it all goes back to Martin, the whole RV thing that got into our heads. Martin had an idea about building an RV7. I wasn't really tuned into it at the time. He went to a few ILAF meetings and was putting a plan together. And then that he'll tell you about that himself. I'm sure he'll tell you. And that kind of went by the wayside. And then I kind of got interested again, I think, around about 2012. I didn't have the time. I didn't have the place. And more importantly, I didn't have the expertise to build one. So I decided that the best thing to do was, and in order to fly one, was to buy one. So I did. And I bought an aircraft that was based at Kilrush called TCAL, which I'm sure a lot of your listeners would know about, an RV6. And that was my entry into the RV community. I owned TCAL up until 2019, I think. 2019, Martin?
19, yeah, November 19.
November 19, yeah. So I owned TCAL 2019. But I think it was around about, it would have been February of 2016, Martin called me down to the house for a cup of coffee one morning and he said, look, what do you think about building an RV7? And I said, yeah, sounds good. And so we set about talking about how we'd do this and where we'd do it and what the plan would be.
Yeah, we were looking at options and where to build it and what direction to go and who we were the best guys to get advice on. I've met Stuart once or twice at the ILAS meetings, and Kevin, you also had heard of Stuart through one of your...
Yeah, a lad called Tony Khan, who was involved in a build that Stuart subsequently got involved in. Tony Khan used to... I fly with Aer Lingus, and Tony Khan used to fly with us, and then he went to British Airways. And he's from Limerick, and he's from the October, and Tony was involved in the build with three other guys, and... And I knew that they had started the build themselves, but I knew the city shop by someone and I wasn't sure who. So I rang Tony, and Tony mentioned Stuart and said Stuart was the man to do the job. He was the best guy in the country. And so that was it, really. We said, grand, that's made up our minds. And we made the phone call and we arranged to meet Stuart and have a chat about it.
Well, Stuart, you're on the call as well. They're building you up to this amazing introduction we have to give you. Tell me about your involvement in the project from your perspective.
I can't remember exactly who contacted me, but somebody did. And we met up in a local hotel and started to chat about it. And we came to an agreement and I said... Guys, I'd love to.
And what's your background in the building of aircraft?
a friend of mine, Brian Shane, RV7, as he has Echo India, Victor India, India. I think it was 2008 or 2009, maybe, approached me to say that he was just started to build, and circumstances being, he needed someone to give him a hand. Long story short, I looked at it and I was completely captivated by the whole thing. And Brian's flew, I think, 2011, late 2011, I think.
Mark, we kind of missed over at the beginning of our conversation that of you being the catalyst behind this idea. What put the fire in your belly to build an aircraft yourself?
One of another captain that I fly with in Belfast, he used to talk about this RV7 home-built aircraft. And he had started one a couple of years earlier. He talked so much about it that I had to come and see what he was doing. Me still flying and instructing light aircraft, when I realized what he meant by a home built or that type of a home built, it being an all metal aircraft that could pull 6G aerobatic. It had a short field performance. Me also from a fireman background, always wanted to fly in and out of my own field. Also, it always held its resale value. And doing a bit of research on what he was saying, he was right, and he's still right today. He got what was known as a slow build. He got all his two formats: a quick build and a slow build. And the slow build, it adds, in his case, it added another 3 or 4 years to the build. He has finished his and flown it a couple of months before ours, but he was an extra 7 or 8 years building it.
But that's an amazing commitment of time to any single project. How do you keep the enthusiasm going on something like that?
If you have flown one, you will never give up. Basically, it's a remarkable airplane to fly. It's hard to describe it, but if you've flown one, you'll want to build one. Once that's why, after Kevin was kind enough to let me fly his for a good 2 hours on Kevin's old aircraft, and that's why the cup of coffee was called down in my house, because I felt that we want to move forward on building a complete new one from scratch. That was my feeling on that, and that's because of how it flies.
Well, Kevin, expand on that passion for us. You know, having owned one and then gotten into the business of building one, what is it about the RV7 or the 6 even?
Well, it's just it's what's known in the business as the RV smile. Martin kind of was alluding to there, and I guess really, if you fly airplanes too and light aircraft, it's the aircraft itself. It's very sensitive. It'll bite you very quickly. It reacts very quickly. I'll give you a story. The guy that built the airplane, the GKL, the RV6 that I owned, and I was looking for some parts for it after I bought it. I know then where I would suss them out, if I could suss them out of the vans or whatever. So I rang him, a guy called John Kelsall, and he had an engineering business in the UK. We were chatting, and fair play to him, he was very good, very knowledgeable. He came back to me very quickly with the pieces that I was looking for and where I could suss them out. And we were talking about the aircraft. He was actually involved in three of them. He built an RV6. Which is the one that I had. He was involved in an RV7, and he finished off a half-built RV8. So he was quite experienced in it. But he said that the 6 that he built was the best one he built. And then he made this comment to me, which he said, I'm not bragging. He said it handles exactly like a Spitfire. And he said, the only reason I know that, he said, is that I've actually flown a Spitfire. So I said, okay, that's a pretty good indictment. And it's funny that there's a lot of RAF guys that when they retire, this is the choice of airplane that they go for. Because of what Mark said, it's +6, -3, you know. So yeah, you can put an inverted system into it, that would be cherry offices.
There's actually a display team, I think, in the UK based on the
Orbit. There is the Black Ravens, They have 5 or RV8s, and I think some of them are ex or RAF also, or ex RAF or whatever. But that's the preferred choice, apparently. And maybe that will explain to your listeners that, you know, the reason why we went for it is just the pleasure of flying it. You get out of it and you're smiling for a long time afterwards, you know. it's a great airplane to fly.
It has the versatility of aerobatics, but also of being a touring aircraft.
Yeah, it ticks an awful lot of boxes. Mm. So, and depending on the version, like I went for the 6, which is side by side. So the criteria for me was I hadn't much experience on tail draggers. A lot of experience on tricycle aircraft, but nothing on tail draggers. So I wanted that. That was one of the ticks. The other one was I wanted an aircraft that you could have a bit of fun in, hence the +6 -3. And I wanted something that had a short field performance and takeoff and landing. Mm. And the RVs, they tick all those boxes in spades. So and depending on, so it was just depending on the model. And the one for me was the side by side, which is I wanted, you know, instead of a bit in tandem, I wanted someone beside me that I could, you know,
chat
them in the face as they were screaming.
Stuart, can I come back to you
as I was screaming.
As you were screaming, exactly. I was going to come back to you, Stuart, because, you know, I'm thinking about the idea that these lads get in touch with you with a great deal of enthusiasm and even, as I say, practical exposure to the aircraft. But what do you look out for if you were going to get involved in a project like this? What's your criteria for involvement?
My criteria has changed, but be able to look back and say what it is, what the criteria is. But it's the relationship with the guys that have asked you to help out and build. That's terribly important, because if it becomes fraught, where's the fun in that? Hmm. So the relationship has to be good. It's all about the pleasure of doing the job after that, you know. And I'm very lucky; these guys let me fly their airplanes. And as Kevin is saying, that you've once you've been flying them, you just never want to fly something else. You just want to stay with them. So responsive, you know, 2 fingers and a thumb on the joystick, you can do everything. Or else on the other side of the scale, shall we say, take off anywhere in Middle Ireland, you're in France touching down in 2 hours. Wow. It doesn't burn a lot of juice. And for a tail dragger, they're quite benign in a way.
Martin mentioned a slow build and a quick build. Can you differentiate those for us?
The slow build is flat pack. It's IKEA. It's absolutely flat pack. Hmm. And you've got all the flat pieces and you have to put them all together. You know, there's a certain amount of preparation done for you with it, but you really have to put it together. Now, the quick build is the fuselage would arrive looking like an aluminium canoe, an open-top canoe. And you start there and you start putting your stuff in. The wings are probably, depending on what you're putting into them, they are, say, 70-75% already built. So the hard stuff is done in the wings. The tanks, which are always cause a bit of grief building, they are fabricated and fitted to the wings, and the spars are ready for you, and you just have to do some skinning and finishing off the wings, the tips, etc. A fair amount of work per wing, but nonetheless, as I say, about 70-75% done.
What was the timeline for Romeo Victor, which we're talking about at the moment? When did that start and how did it progress?
I think it took 4 years, but there was a lot of breaks in between for me. There was other projects going on and other jobs that I got involved in. But as a rule of thumb for a quick build, I usually say 2 years. So what was it, guys? Was it 2016 when the first...
Yeah, 2016,
yes. Yeah, the first box, the vans send you all the bits for the empennage, and you learn on the empennage. And a lot of guys have learned on the empennage and put it away and never looked at it again, if you get my meaning.
I do, and I'm just curious, how did you get past that then? Like, when was that and how did that happen?
Well, for me,
we kept the pressure on him, Michael.
All right.
we didn't really have to. He enjoyed building it.
Were you hands on yourselves, guys, Martin?
We were to a point.
When Stuart would let you.
Yes, when short letters.
A bit like that, but at certain times you do need the second body. You know, get into that fuselage there on your back with the booking bar, and behave yourself. I'll tell you what to do. Type of thing.
Yes. For flying the aircraft, having built it, is that I'm curious about that experience because, you must have an extra insight into every sound and every sense of the aircraft.
Yes, you try to ignore that.
Do you?
Try to have faith in what you've done. You have gone over it several times, but yeah, you do feel little vibrations and changes and wonder what's going on there.
Who did the test flight?
I did.
Kevin did. brave man. Well done.
Tell us about that, Kevin.
It was funny because we all along it was kind of thought that I would do the test flight all along, and then at the end of 2019 I was diagnosed with a bit of bowel cancer, so that kind of took me out of the loop. And thank God it's all. I've got through it, and it's been very successful. And I caught it early. And for anyone out there I would say to you, if you have any symptoms of like that, don't hesitate, go get them checked out. The earlier you get this thing or anything like this, the better it is. So my advice to anyone, as a bit of side information, is get yourself checked out. Don't worry about the COVID. Go out and get yourself checked. And keep on top of it. And so I was very lucky, touch wood. But it took me out of the loop. And all of 2020, as I was going through what I was going through, I went through some chemotherapy with it. I had the operation from chemotherapy. And then eventually I was on a colostomy bag, and I had that operation reversed. And the airplane was coming to the point whereby it was going to be finished and ready for the test flight. But it didn't look like that I would have my license back to do that. But because of the COVID and the stuff going on, it actually stretched out a bit. And I did get well. I got my license back. We had a couple of people in mind to do the flight check, but it was proving difficult with the restrictions. So it eventually came back to me, and because I was the fellow that was going to do it. So yeah, I got my license back. I got checked out in Brian's aircraft, and I was happy to do it, and I was privileged to actually get the chance to fly this aircraft, fly an aircraft that had never been flown before. And it was a great experience. I'll cherish that for as long as I live. It was fantastic. And it's a great airplane. Stuart has done an incredibly brilliant job. I've flown a few RVs, and it sounds like a cliche, but it is the best one I've flown by a country mile, I have to say.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do it. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction. And free shipping. And that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Stuart, tell us about the colour of the aircraft. I know people are only hearing us chat rather than seeing us, but we'll encourage people, and we'll put a picture up on the programme notes as well. It's a stunning colour scheme.
Well, this is down to Kevin and Martin, really. They spotted another aircraft, and from what I gathered, they contacted the people and said, "Would you mind if we copied?"
It was something I spotted on the AOPA website. Mm. It was a video clip of an RV-10 that was refurbished through AOPA in the States, and there was a video test of that against the Cirrus, and the color scheme caught my eye. So I found another video of how they refurbished this thing, and then I sent it on to Martin and said, "Well, what do you think about this little colour?" We'd already picked out a colour. We'd already chosen a colour, which was kind of a red-grey, silvery paint scheme. But I sent this on to Martin and I said, "What do you think?" And Martin says, "Absolutely, that's the colour. That's it." And so this aircraft, this RV-10 it was in a raffle for its members. So you joined this raffle in America, and I think you paid $100 or something, and you had the chance to win this aircraft. They've done a fabulous job. They did a whole job. They refurbished the whole lot, and then they repainted it. New avionics. And I emailed someone over there in AOPA, and I said, "Look, we liked your aircraft. It's doing a brilliant job. We're building an RV-7, and do you mind if we copied the colour scheme?" And she replied back and said, "Absolutely, no problem there. And by the way, my ancestors from County Cork, as usual."
It works.
"Send me a picture when you have it done." So I said, "No problem there." And that was it. Martin will explain to you the actual process about painting this aircraft, because it was a bit of a challenge in the finish.
Before you say anything, whatever about me building the aircraft, I had nothing to do with the painting of the aircraft. That is down to Martin. And the amount of work that he put into that, fabulous, let me say. Carry on.
Thank you. Yes, the spraying of the aircraft, I have a good mate close by who does car spraying, and he's got a very good reputation for the business. So I had mentioned about spraying an aircraft, and of course he had no experience in spraying an aircraft, but he said, yeah, there'll be no problem, but as long as we get all the primers and that right for the aluminium. But the process started with we wanted to alchrome the aircraft, or otherwise known as anodyne in America, where you treat the aluminium that gives it a longer life against corrosion. So we decided to do that. Not that many light aircraft would be done with that. So we started with that procedure here in Sligo. And then we went for the two-pack epoxy primer, which is the green primer to put on aircraft. And from there, then we had to work out to get the stripes and the design on the aircraft. Now, that proved very challenging, because I was of the opinion that some of that could have been done computer-driven. And I had one or two lads look at it and said, no. In some cases, they could do a wrap. In other words, a stick-on vinyl for the stripes and changing the color. So put on a base color and do the vinyl finish. But other people was advising against that due to can cause corrosion, cause problems. we ventured down with tape and everything on. So we had to put on, you can't put black over red. So everything had to go black first. Then wherever the red was going on, and then followed by the gold. That was all done with fine line blue tape, as known as, and masked out every time. There was a lot of hours put into that, but the end result was very impressive. And I have to mention the guy that was with me doing it was Peter Gallagher of Gallagher Motors here in Sligo. Mm.
So when a project like this starts to come to an end, if it ever does, I'm wondering, by the way, there's the unveiling of it. How was that for you all? Because, you know, you put so much effort into something over a long period of time and then it's done. Was there a moment of anticlimax or pure joy?
I think there's a combination of both for me, because we had penciled in, we had planned to have a crowd of people there. And there was a lot of our friends that wanted to be there. So we were going to make an event of it. Because, again, COVID, it was the very opposite from that point of view. A lot of the people that were to be there haven't seen it yet. But on the other hand, it was a joy. The day it leaped into the air and to see it fly, it still is a joy, because every time it goes into the air, I get that feeling. Whether I'm in it or not, I still get that feeling. Yeah.
And Stuart, as the builder, when, you know, do you ever get to detach from the project, or are you still connected?
No, it's terribly difficult to get detached from them, because you've spent so much time. You can look at an individual rivet and almost remember, that damn rivet gave me a lot of bother. you were talking with Martin about your feelings on the day and what happens. Usually, I've been at quite a few first flights, and it's usually a big party.
Mm.
Great time, lots of people around, and planes fly in. You know, it's an occasion. And it was sad that this time, with this plane, that we couldn't have the party. But nonetheless, I remember the first time, like Brian's plane, when I saw it fly first, saw it take off and zoom overhead, I was in tears. Okay, I've hardened up a little since then, but the emotion is still there.
Yeah.
Still there.
Kevin, if I can go back for a moment, you were sharing your own story there about, you know, the challenge that you went through. And I do like the way that you reaffirmed the idea that people should get things checked out early. And what's the phrase they say to men? Don't die of embarrassment. The other thing that occurs to me, that going through that treatment for you, there must have been, you know, moments where you would feel reasonably low. What role did the aircraft play in keeping your spirits up?
It's always, there was ups and downs with it, you know, and, you know, you certainly, the initial prognosis, and you certainly look at your own mortality, and there's at the time you didn't do that. So, yeah, there was a lot of that. But the aircraft, the project, just, you know, this thing was ongoing, and, you know, we were going to get there. We were going to build this thing. And it was a great goal to have throughout. And even besides my own, what I was going through, I think, even for the other guys as well, I think it's with what this COVID has brought to the country and the world, indeed, to have something like this has been brilliant, you know. And like that, I mean, I echo what the lads have said there about the test flight and the day that we unveiled it as such, it was disappointing not to have the people that we wanted there, our family and our friends.
Yeah.
You know, it would have been a good, you know, an even better occasion than what it was. But having said that, it was just great to do it.
The prospect of a couple of summers to come, the occasional fly-in and maybe air show, etc. We'll definitely be seeing this aircraft in the future, I think.
Yeah, we're looking forward to getting to as many fly-ins as we can, and going across the water as well in France, and the airplanes will give us options for that, you know. So yeah, that's all down the road, hopefully.
Well, when people join us on Squawk 7000, we like to find out a little bit about their flying background as well, and where it all started, and where they go. Martin, if I go to you first, your first flight.
First flight would have been in Knock Airport with John Kilcoyne. I met John before aviation. He was a serviceman, a local serviceman for fridge freezers. So I asked him for a spin one day, and he said, come up, and he did. He brought me for the spin, and he said... I have to say, I was what you'd call a nervous passenger. I was going fine until he started to bank the aircraft. I didn't like that bit, but he says, we've got to turn to go back. So he did say to everybody when I had left the airport, we won't see him again. And I was going down the road discovering that that was one of the few things that completely occupied my mind, and I want more.
Wow.
So the next Saturday I arrived up and he couldn't believe it. And that was the start. And within about 18 months of the PPL, then about a year and a half after that, I got the instructor's rating on light aircraft. And from there, I went commercial in 98 with Virgin Express. I was there for 2 years and then went to Go and Stansted for the 2 years. And then went to Belfast in 03, where I got my command in 03 with EasyJet. And I'm there since. I moved from the Boeing in 2010 onto the Airbus. That's me in aviation. Still flying the light aircraft that I got my first flight on. And I'm still doing instruction and gift vouchers on to this day. It's PA-28. It's the 140. Nice little Cherokee, lovely aircraft.
And still going strong.
Still going strong.
Stuart, yeah. how did you find yourself getting at the sticky end of flying?
Always mad into aircraft, especially vintage aircraft in World War II. Used to go to a lot of air shows in the UK and that. But finally, my good wife gave me a voucher for the local flying club. And I went there and had my first flight with Pat Lanigan Ryan in his mall. Yeah, that was it. Truly and utterly bitten. Continued to join the club and continued, got my PPL and carried on from there. I didn't do any commercial or instruction stuff. Wasn't into that. Then, as I say, in 2009, Brian asked me to give him a hand with his RV, and that end of it took off from there, and it's been a pure pleasure ever since. Thank you, Brian.
What will be next for you, Stuart?
Next is to do a lot more flying and less and not building. No, not building. Just flying for a change.
Why are the two lads smiling when you said that? They're both. If you could only see the two of them here on the screen. Yeah. They don't believe you, I think. Is that it, guys?
No, we do believe them.
Oh, you do believe them.
We do believe them, yeah.
Echo India Sierra Romeo Victor is my swan song.
Oh, right. Okay. Fair enough. So more flying and less building. Yes. Kevin, what did you do to the poor man?
What did we do? I don't know what we did. So, but just on the registration, as Stuart brought it up, we actually wanted to register the aircraft. We personalised the registration. Mm. And we were looking for the registration EISTU, Sierra Tango Uniform, because we wanted to call it after the man who built it, the EISTU. Mm. That unfortunately was taken up by contractors and all those. So I went to a variety of different ones. The only one that really that had any significance was SRV, Stewart's RV. So that's really what
that's a lovely tribute. As we're going through the logbooks, Kevin, your turn. First flight.
First flight was I'd tell you something like yourself, Michael. We never snapper back in 1980 don't believe in cert. Like everyone else, I wanted to fly an airplane. And Martin has mentioned John Kilcoyne and another guy called Sean McIntyre, two service engineers in Charlottetown, the hometown, Mayo. And they were members of the Mayo Flying Club at the time, flying in Castlebar. And so January of that year, I believe, I decided, well, this is my career, is what I want to do, so I might as well fly an airplane and see if I like it. And and the lads are flying, so they took me over, and that was the day before my 17th birthday, and that was my first flight. It's something you'll never forget, you know. And then in there with a guy called a legend called Tom Kniff. You might have the lads and the flying circles have probably thought of Tom Kniff, chief flying instructor there, in a Cherokee 140 Alpha Tank Kilo. And very similar to the aircraft we have in the club now, which is AOB.
And from that to an Airbus.
And from that, yeah, it was a struggle to, from there, lots of different types of flying, instructing. We left the airplane when the Monsignor Horn graciously built the airport for us. I'm talking about the Connacht Aero Club. It was really our idea to the Monsignor to build the airport there. Not a lot of people believe that story, but we planted that seed in his head. So he built the airport and not, and Charles Sanders, I decided that that's suitable.
Yeah, a runway you can land and take off in about six times, I think. Isn't that it? Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Which we've done.
No doubt.
From there, to the Connacht Aero Club and to Aer Lingus back in 1989. I'm still there to this day.
Well, can we thank the three of you for joining us on our long final version of Squawk 7000. Your enthusiasm is infectious. God knows, Stuart, there might be other people knocking at your door yet, even though you said it was the swan song. And we wish you all the very best and fair weather to fly in Sierra Romeo Victor. Kevin, Stuart and Martin, thank you for joining us on Long Final.
Thank you very much.
And thank you for joining us on this episode of Long Final from Squawk7000.ie. If you'd like to hear more, please subscribe and do tell your friends.